This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, January 16th, 2013. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, Robinson Crusoe never disappeared. On our website, poetryfoundation.org, we have about 33 poems by Weldon Keyes. For a poet so well represented, his bio on the site is quite brief, and it ends quite strangely. I quote, "In 1955, Keyes took his sleeping bag and his savings account book and disappeared, leaving his car on the Golden Gate Bridge. It is not known whether he killed himself or went to Mexico." Very strange. Shortly before he disappeared, Weldon Keyes published his four Robinson poems, which have turned out to be his best-known work. They are about Robinson, an updating and modernist distortion of Robinson Crusoe. The Chicago poet Kathleen Rooney recently published a book of her own Robinson poems based on Weldon Keyes' character. And up on our website, there's an interview with Kathleen Rooney about her project, written by Weldon Keyes' biographer, James Rydell. I asked Kathleen Rooney to pick out two of Keyes' Robinson poems for this podcast. Kathleen, tell us a bit more about Weldon Keyes, if you would. It's terrible to be known just for having disappeared.
Yeah, I think Keyes, paradoxically, is able to be tragically dead, but also triumphantly still alive because of the confusion surrounding his disappearance or death. And I think that's honestly one of the things that probably drew me and a lot of people to him at first, is this mystery and his ability to kind of have it both ways. He is from Beatrice, Nebraska, this very, very small town, and it was kind of expected that he would grow up and go into the family business. But from an early age, he seemed determined to do something else. So he, as soon as he could, you know, moved away to college. He lived in Denver for a while and then went to New York City in the early 1940s. And he was a reviewer whose writing appeared in The Nation and in Time magazine. He published a lot of poems. He published over 40 short stories. But to his mind, he was never as successful as he wished he could be. And he also did a ton of things like painting and music. And I think part of the problem was that he was so hyphenate that he had kind of what we would today call a branding issue.
What appealed to you so much about his Robinson character? Was he thinking, I'm going to put Robinson Crusoe into the 20th century as if he never died and see what happens? What is this Robinson character?
A lot of times people read Keyes as a very bitter, dark poet, which he absolutely is, but I think he's also a funny poet, and I think there's a lot of wonderful humor in the Robinson poems, and he even said that he considered them a satire. And so, yeah, I think he had that concept of what would happen if we took this solitary figure and imported him into this era when the self is very restricted and very commodified. And I think, you know, you can kind of see that reflected in dissatisfaction at a lot of the things that are supposed to make people happy, like parties or sexual encounters or the finer objects of good living.
And we're going to listen to two of them. And the first one you chose is called Robinson at Home. And can you tell us just a little bit about it to set it up?
Yeah, Robinson's asleep in this poem, but even in sleep, he's not at rest and is trying to figure out, who am I? What is my role in this world?
Well, let's give it a listen. Here's Weldon Keyes reading Robinson at Home.
Curtains drawn back, the door ajar. All winter long, it seemed, a darkening began. But now the moonlight and the odors of the street conspire and combine toward one community. These are the rooms of Robinson. Bleached, wan, and colorless this light, as though all the blurred daybreaks of the spring found an asylum here, perhaps for Robinson alone, who sleeps. Were there more music sifted through the floors, and moonlight of a different kind, he might awake to hear the news at 10, which will be shocking moderately. This sleep is from exhaustion, but his old desire to die like this has known a lessening. Now there is only this coldness that he has to wear, but not in sleep. Observant scholar, traveler, or uncouth bearded figure squatting in a cave, a keen-eyed sniper on the barricades, a heretic in catacombs, a famed roué, a beggar on the streets, the confidant of popes, all these are Robinson in sleep, who mumbles as he turns, "There is something in this madhouse that I symbolize, this city, nightmare, black." He wakes in sweat to the terrible moonlight and what might be silence. It drones like wires far beyond the roofs, and the long curtains blow into the room.
That was Weldon Keyes reading Robinson at Home, which was recorded in Berkeley in 1952. Kathleen, one thing that's kind of odd about the poem is that it's not clear that it's Robinson Crusoe until very late in the poem when he says,
"Observant scholar, traveler, or uncouth bearded figure squatting in a cave."
And that's just part of this Robinson's dream.
He
goes through all these different types.
"A keen-eyed sniper on the barricades, a heretic in catacombs, a famed roué, a beggar on the streets, the confidant of popes."
What do you think Keyes is saying there?
I think it's an exploration of the end of a really comforting idea of a unified self or a purpose-driven self or a self whose existence is clear and whose goals in life are subsequently clear as well. And I think that also kind of speaks to Keyes' own dissatisfaction with trying to figure out the self he wanted to be. And I think this hyphenate musician, poet, critic, painter identity that Keyes had, you know, he wanted to be able to have that, but I think he was frustrated. You know, in the capitalist world, you're supposed to like pick the cog in the machine that you want to be. And if you try to be multiple cogs, it's probably not going to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another thing that I love about this poem and is a spot where you can see this satire and this dark humor is the end of the third stanza where it says he might wake to hear the news at 10.
"Which will be shocking, moderately."
And just that use of the adverb, you know, you're not supposed to use a lot of adverbs, but I think it's a brilliant adverb because, you know, even the shock in Robinson's world is moderate. So it's upsetting, but it's not thrilling.
You know, maybe it's the way he reads, but there's something very noirish about the poem as well. He could be a narrator in a film noir from the late 1940s, early 50s. He's got that kind of dry Midwestern broadcasting voice. And we're going to hear a little bit more of that noirishness in the second poem you chose called Relating to Robinson. This poem's a little bit more difficult in its structure. It's a little bit harder to follow than the one we just heard. Is there anything that you can say about Relating to Robinson to set it up for us?
Yeah, part of the reason I chose this poem is that it does have a first person in it, and I think that even enhances the noirishness more. You have the narrator saying, "I thought I made out Robinson ahead of me." So it's taking this random running into somebody you know or think you know on the street and makes it much more scary and much more self-doubting.
So it's about an urban encounter, and it doesn't go particularly well. This is Weldon Keyes reading Relating to Robinson.
"Somewhere in Chelsea, early summer, and walking in the twilight toward the docks, I thought I made out Robinson ahead of me. From an uncurtained second-story room, a radio was playing There's a Small Hotel. A kite twisted above dark rooftops and slow-drifting birds. We were alone there, he and I, inhabiting the empty street. Under a sign for Natural Bloom cigars, where lights clicked softly in the dusk from red to green, he stopped and gazed into a window where a plaster Venus, modeling a tress, looked out at eastbound traffic. But Robinson, I knew, was out of town. He summers at a place in Maine, sometimes on Fire Island, sometimes the Cape. Leaves town in June and comes back after Labor Day. And yet I almost called out Robinson. There was no chance. Just as I passed, turning my head to search his face, his own head turned with mine and fixed me with dilated, terrifying eyes that stopped my blood. His voice came at me like an echo in the dark. I thought I saw the whirlpool opening. Kicked all night at a bolted door. You must have followed me from Astor Place. An empty paper floats down at the last. And then a day as huge as yesterday in pairs unrolled its horror on my face until it blocked. Running in sweat to reach the docks, I turned back for a second glance. I had no certainty there in the dark whether it was Robinson or someone else. The block was bare. The Venus, bathed in blue fluorescent light, stared toward the river. As I hurried west, the lights across the bay were coming on. The boats moved silently, and the low whistles blew.
That was Relating to Robinson, which was also recorded in Berkeley in 1952. Now, Kathleen, there's a couple really odd things about this poem. And yeah. one of the things that listeners might not have caught, but there's a long quote by this Robinson fellow or someone who looks like Robinson towards the end of the poem. That's when he says,
"I thought I saw the whirlpool opening, kicked all night at a bolted door. You must have followed me from Astor Place. An empty paper floats down at the last. And then a day as huge as yesterday in pairs unrolled its horror on my face until it blocked."
What do you make of that strange verbiage coming out of this Robinson fellow's mouth?
One of the things that I like about that passage of dialogue is the way that it casts doubt on the sanity or state of mind of this person who may or may not be Robinson. Mm-hmm. But it also casts doubt about the first person narrator of this poem, the hesitancy and the uncertainty of "I thought I made out Robinson ahead of me." So,
and his running away, when he runs away.
"Running in sweat to reach the docks, I turned back for a second glance. I had no certainty there in the dark whether it was Robinson or someone else."
If this is his friend, he's totally mishandling the situation.
Yeah. And again, speaking to that sense of super profound estrangement of modernity and life in the modern city, and not really being able to relate to yourself or other people in a way that's going to be satisfying and in a way that might actually be terrifying.
"We were alone there, he and I, inhabiting the empty street. Under a sign for natural bloom cigars, where lights clicked softly in the dusk from red to green, he stopped and gazed into a window."
This is very Edward Hopper-ish to me, because they're in Chelsea, which is downtown on the west side of Manhattan, and nobody's around except for this guy and Robinson. And
and
Hopper's paintings are often urban yet strangely depopulated at the same time. And it immediately kind of brings a dreamlike slant of light across the whole poem, just to think that there's nobody else around. That's rather odd. Another odd thing that I found is at the very end,
"The block was bare. The Venus, bathed in blue fluorescent light, stared toward the river. As I hurried west, the lights across the bay were coming on. The boats moved silently, and the low whistles blew."
Now, on the west side of Manhattan, nobody ever calls it the bay. What they call the bay in the west, as I hurried west, is San Francisco.
Right.
It seems like the whole poem just suddenly moved out west at the end of it.
Yeah, I think that's yet another way you can see why people, you know, read Robinson and the people in the poems as alter egos to Keyes and try to find clues, not only to Robinson, but to Keyes' own life and state of mind.
Yeah, because he spent a lot of time out in the Bay Area. And that's,
yeah,
in fact,
San Francisco is where he left. And kind of in a, you know, with this running, you know, as I hurried west, there's a sense in his own departure from New York of fleeing. He didn't just move to San Francisco. He sort of saw himself as kind of on this weird exodus.
You know, it occurs to me, if he's born in 1914, that would make him almost 100 years old.
Yeah, his birthday is February 24th, so...
It's not impossible, but he could be listening to this.
He could. He would be 99 almost, but he could be listening.
Thanks so much, Kathleen.
Thank you.
Kathleen Rooney is currently teaching poetry at DePaul University in Chicago. Her latest book is called Robinson Alone, and it's published by Goldwake Press. You can read James Rydell's interview with her about the book and Weldon Keyes on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.